Welcome to the Frank Reactions podcast, where we discuss how you can get great reactions from your staff, your customers, prospects, and the public through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tema Frank, and today we've got an interview with Carrie Bodine, who is the co-author of the excellent book, Outside In, The Power of Putting Customers at the Center of Your Business. And if you have not read that book, I highly recommend it. It is one of the absolute best books that I've read about customer experience and how to transform your organization. In today's interview, Carrie and I talked about things like, what are the barriers to changing corporate attitudes about customer experience? And what are some of the strategies for doing so successfully? I will chat with you briefly at the end of the interview.
I'm Carrie Bodine. I am a customer experience consultant and coach, and I focus on helping companies learn and then adopt human-centered design into their organizations. And I am also the co-author of Outside In, The Power of Putting Customers at the Center of Your Business. And this book is essentially a guide to understanding the business value of customer experience, and then what organizations actually need to do in order to deliver a better customer experience.
Carrie, you've worked primarily with large companies or companies of a variety of sizes?
I've worked with mostly large organizations, Fortune 500 companies, and companies that are based just solely in one country, and then also those that are global.
One of the things that I find very interesting, because I've been interviewing a lot of people and doing a lot of research on customer experience, and there's a lot of evidence that shows pretty clearly that better customer experiences will lead to greater profitability ultimately and greater value. So why is it that you think there's such resistance to actually making the investments required to improve customer experience?
Well, I think that the first reason is that customer experience for a lot of companies has been this kind of fluffy, ethereal concept for a long time. You know, it is not something that's traditionally been taught in business schools. It's not easy to put into a spreadsheet, which is the main way that a lot of companies manage, their internal operations. And so I think it's just been hard for a lot of executives to just really get their heads around what this is and then what they would actually need to do in order to create a great experience, and therefore, hard to understand what the business results of that would be. I think another reason why it's tough for executives to get this is that it really requires a long-term view on their businesses. And let's face it, we live in a world in both a business community and a financial structure that rewards short-term thinking, right? I mean, everything from quarterly bonuses to the stock market, we are rewarded to deliver results today.
Right.
And customer experience is really a long game. You need to develop really lasting systems within your organization. It's not something that, there's no magic pill where, you just swallow it and all of a sudden your organization is magically delivering a great customer experience tomorrow. And so it requires long-term investments. And then also the outputs are also very long-term in nature. You know, the holy grail of delivering a great customer experience is really about customer loyalty. And that is not created overnight. Customer loyalty is the result of, many consistently good interactions over long periods of time. And so, it's just something that takes a long time to build. And again, that's just really difficult. Even if someone, an executive, kind of gets it in their gut, it is really hard to go to, the CEO or go to the board and say, hey, yeah, we're going to take a loss, for the next three quarters. But ultimately, this is going to deliver us great customer loyalty and really sustainable profits for the next decade.
So is it credible, do you think, that any publicly traded company will invest in this? Like, how do they sell their shareholders on it? Because that's so quarterly driven.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many, I mean, I couldn't give you an exact number, but there are just tons of publicly traded companies that are investing in customer experience. There's actually some really interesting data that shows that companies that do provide a better customer experience do better in the stock market in the long run. And that's really the message to sell to the board and to investors. So actually, one of the best examples of this comes from the American Customer Satisfaction Index. And so if you had invested $100 back in the year 2000 in the S&P 500, it would be worth about $120 today. But if you had invested in the American Customer Satisfaction Index portfolio, which is essentially a group of companies that either have very high scores on the American Customer Satisfaction Index, or they've got increasing scores. So they're providing a great customer experience today, or they're making rapid gains in that area. If you had invested that same $100 in the American Customer Satisfaction Index portfolio in 2000, it would be worth close to $600 today. And so that's a huge gap between the S&P 500 and the index based on companies that provide a great customer experience. So the stock market story is there, but it's a long game. It's not a, hey, here are our results this quarter. It's, if you're looking to do day trades, they're probably not the right company for you. But if you're looking to make a long-term investment, a company that provides a great customer experience, I'm not a financial analyst. I'm not offering investment advice. But for me, that's a good bet.
What have you found has been the most effective thing at convincing skeptical executives? Is it citing things like that ASCII study, or what else works to convince them and turn them around on that?
Yeah, they love seeing those charts.
Yeah, for sure.
Pretty effective. And then, most companies really like to hear then specific case studies, so that they can really understand, okay, here's a company that I can relate to and I can understand what they did.
If someone, let's say in a company is responsible, or someone on the executive but not the very top decides they want to do something about customer experience, where would you suggest that they start?
Well, we've got a couple of different ideas for someone in that position. First of all, is the tried and true methodology of trying something small. And then seeing the results of that and presenting those results and kind of, letting it snowball into something bigger and bigger. As I mentioned, I'm a huge fan of human-centered design. And one of the tenets of human-centered design is to prototype and test. I was just talking with someone the other day who was really concerned about their corporate culture and, the type of people that they were hiring. And I said, hey, why don't you just tweak one of your interview questions, ask a question that JetBlue actually used to ask. I'm not sure if they still do. But the question is, tell me about a time when you went above and beyond for a customer. And, I said, this doesn't require, massive reworking of your hiring process. It's just one question that you can add to the interview process, and you can try that out and see what the responses are. And then, see if that guides who you decide to hire and who you decide to not move forward with. And, so again, that's something really small that you can just,
And what impact did that have when they tried that?
Well, I just gave her this idea a couple of days ago, so I don't know if she's actually moving forward with it. But the idea is that, starting with a small initiative, starting with something like that, starting with, making changes to your website or changing a single policy within your call center or in your retail store, and just seeing, hey, can we actually gauge what effect, that one little change had in terms of employee behavior or in terms of, customer feedback that we're getting, and then use that again to go to the rest of the executives or the CEO and say, hey, we made this one change. We think we could actually have a bigger impact if we rolled this out or expanded the initiative.
Well, that's really reassuring, because that suggests then that it is, you don't have to change everything all at once, that you can make a bit of a dent in it incrementally.
Yeah, and I'd argue you can't change everything. That's right. I don't know a single organization that has ever approached customer experience in that way. And no matter what you're doing, if you work in IT or in operations or marketing, you can't change everything all at once. That's just, I mean, first of all, it's a very risky way to do things because if you're wrong, then you've spent a lot of money and resources on that one big change. So anyway, taking this prototyping and testing approach, I think is great. So the other thing that I would recommend is to bring in the voice of the customer. So a lot of times upper executives don't understand really the critical issues that are really going on and just how bad the customer experience is because they don't have face-to-face or ear-to-ear customer contact on a regular basis. And so, you know, when you play them customer service calls, when you bring them verbatims from a voice of the customer survey, when you show them the results of a usability test, video, you know, these are the things where you really bring in that voice, the true voice of the customer, not just, you know, a bunch of, you know, survey results, but really something that's going to hit them in the gut. That I think is a really powerful tool. And it's a powerful tool, not just for the executive team, but really for any part of the organization. Hearing the voice of the customer is tough. But I think it is one of the most effective things that you can do to get people to realize why the organization needs to change and why they personally need to change.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, I've done usability testing of websites since 2000. And yeah, absolutely. When they see that, they're always really surprised. And it's, well, you know, the evidence is there.
It is.
But the interesting thing is with that, too, I have found that most companies are still reluctant to pay for user experience testing, which boggles my mind. Like, why is that?
Well, they're either not willing to pay for it, or maybe they don't know that they should really be doing it in the first place. So I was working with another client recently, and they were this is a B2B company working with a big design management consulting firm and design firm. And they came in and they basically had usability testing. And this is the design agency coming in and saying, we're going to do usability testing like 5 weeks before the launch. And you know, my question was
kind of late.
Yeah. If you find major problems, like we completely don't understand how to use this system, when are you going to fix it? Are you going to launch something that just doesn't allow people to do their jobs? Are you going to delay the launch? And so, you know, we talked it through and now they're going to do staged usability testing and, you know, not six week projects. You know, we're talking about, you know, a handful of users, but at key stages, you know, with the wireframes and then with, you know, the visual designs and then front end code, so that if they do find any big showstoppers, they can address it early on. But again, you know, this is a design agency that's coming in and saying, you know, this is our recommendation. And so for me, I think there's just a lot of a complete lack of knowledge out there about some of these best practices. So, you know, sometimes it's the problem that people don't want to pay for it. But other times I think it's just they just don't even know that they should be doing it or could be doing it.
Or could be doing it. So what are, apart from skepticism in the executive suite, what are some of the typical barriers that you see companies facing when they're trying to improve customer experience?
I think the biggest one is lack of understanding of that holistic customer journey. You know, that end-to-end customer journey from the time that the customer starts to find out about the company to, you know, buying a product or service and then, you know, actually using that throughout whatever period of time. And, you know, you know, with all the transitions and handoffs that have to happen between an organization, there's very few people within a large company, and I would put this on probably most large companies out there, that truly understand really all of those different handoffs and all of the intricacies that are involved there. And so, you know, the first step is just understanding, okay, this is really what the customer's going through, but then it's also looking at for any single person within the organization, whether they work in finance or legal or operations or marketing or, you know, the e-commerce, wherever they are, understanding how the work that they do affects the work that other people do and how that ultimately, you know, trickles up to the customer experience. And so Yeah, I just think lack of understanding of that big holistic picture is mm-hmm. one of the big issues. And then mm-hmm. I would say the other big issue is just resistance to change. And this isn't really even so much an organizational issue, but just a human issue. You know, we are safe and secure, most of us, you know, when we've got a routine, when we know what's expected of us, when we know what to do, you know, when we wake up in the morning or come into work. And this is true in our personal lives and our professional lives. Change is difficult. Change is incredibly stressful. There's, you know, a small portion of the population that truly thrives on it. But for the rest of us, it's hard. And so... Mm-hmm. You know, helping people through that change. And I often talk about a customer experience initiative is simply a very specific type of change initiative.
Absolutely.
And so I think one thing that the people behind customer experience initiatives really aren't as well versed on as I think they should be is really change management. I mean, there's a whole field of study out there around change management. And, you know, it's an area that I'm starting to dive deeper into. And I think that any customer experience professional out there or any executive looking to make customer experience improvements really needs to either become an expert in this themselves or engage change management experts, because that's really what we're talking about.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, having a couple of therapists there along the way is probably also a good idea.
Yes. So in terms of change and change management, I recently interviewed Kelly Harper, who's leading a customer experience initiative at BMO Financial.
I love Kelly Harper.
Yeah, she's great. And, you know, the organization has some 45,000 employees. It's a big company. Is it realistic to think that a company of that size, especially one that's been around for a couple of hundred years, really can change enough to really change their attitudes about customer experience and really make drastic change? Because right now, you know, people certainly in Canada, the big five banks are all the same in most people's minds. Is it realistic to think that that can be changed?
I would say absolutely. It's possible. I think, again, people have to take a really long-term view on this. You know, one of the biggest parts of improving the customer experience is changing the corporate culture. And again, you know, we've talked about people are resistant to change. And, you know, I mean, it involves changing not only work processes, but, you know, people's attitudes and their behaviors on a day-to-day basis. And so changing a corporate culture is like turning the Titanic, right? I mean, it is a slow moving process. And a lot of it has to do with who's leaving the company and who's coming into the company. And that, again, in a company the size of a large bank or any large organization, isn't going to happen overnight. And so, yes, I think it's definitely possible. It takes an amazingly concerted effort across all parts of the organization, but it is certainly possible. And I would hate, you know, companies, large companies out there to think that it's not, you know, I mean, I think that would just be kind of throwing their arms up and giving up. The one thing I would say about this though, is that when we talk about the companies that are really heralded for having an amazing customer experience, you know, we talk about USAA and Zappos and Ritz-Carlton and Disney, and these are companies that had customer experience in their DNA from
the start. Yeah.
Exactly, from the start. And so someone asked me the other day, they said, you know, can you give me an example of a company that has truly made the turnaround? And I didn't have an example. I have lots of examples of companies that are doing the right thing in isolated pockets. But isolated pockets is not going to turn the ship. And so I think it's still going to be a while before we see a company that used to be bad or mediocre and has truly, you know, risen to the ranks of a company, you know, like Zappos or Ritz-Carlton.
Darn, I was hoping you would have examples for me because I haven't been able to find any.
No. And again, that's not to be a discouragement to anyone. I think that, you know, it is certainly something worth striving for. But I think it's just helpful to recognize that this is not a 5-year initiative. This is not a 10-person team responsible for this. This is truly changing the way that the organization does business. Every single minute of the day.
So to make this kind of change, I mean, you're looking at process issues, you're looking at human resources issues, you're looking at production issues. What area is the most important area to start with?
So I think there's a couple of places where companies should start. First of all, every company should be identifying the issues that are the biggest problem within their organization. So, you know, there's not just one place to start for everyone, right? So in some companies, you know, they might have a very toxic culture and they know they've got to change that and, you know, do some exiting of employees and rebuild the organization before they can really do anything else. Some company may realize that there is a major problem with their ordering process online, you know, and they've just got to fix that because it's kind of the burning platform that they're all standing on. You know, and so sometimes it might be a technology thing. Sometimes it might be a cultural thing. Sometimes it might be a process thing. But again, that every company has to decide that for itself based on the customer research they do. And really identifying those biggest pain points and really where they're bleeding, you know, customers and revenue. The other thing that I would say is that it may seem kind of flippant, but start at the beginning. And that what I mean by that is the beginning of the customer journey. So onboarding is such an important part of the customer experience for a lot of companies. Maybe not a retailer. But, you know, for any kind of large service company or companies that have very complicated customer loyalty programs, that onboarding process can be really the thing that sets the tone for the rest of the customer relationship. So if companies can't find any one particular pain point, I think that onboarding process is a great place to start.
If you've got a company that is struggling financially, how would you convince them that investing more in their workplace and in customer service or customer experience makes sense?
Probably the first thing I would do is, again, try to help them understand the long-term business impact of this, right? And yeah. instead of trying to focus on, you know, the next quarter or the next 6 months. The other thing that I would do is try to help them just build an ROI model. So, you know, help them understand, okay, where are you spending your money today and how much could you divert to a specific customer experience initiative? And then let's actually think about what type of returns you would actually get from that. So, you know, just taking the call center as a really easy example. So, you know, what would it cost to actually invest into additional customer service reps, you know, if you're a relatively small shop? And then, you know, what impact would that have on your wait time? You know, you can model that out very easily. And then what impact does that wait time have on your customer service scores? How much, you know, how much people are willing to spend with you, customer loyalty? I mean, these are they're actually pretty easy financial calculations to do. And of course, they're full of all kinds of assumptions and they're not going to be perfect and 100% accurate. But you know what? No financial model, no ROI model is. And there's no reason why customer experience professionals or any executive can't make a reasonable ROI model for customer experience initiatives as well.
If you were in an organization that had a reputation currently for bad customer experience, how would you start convincing the customers that things really are changing?
Well, I can tell you what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't go out and announce that we're making all kinds of customer experience improvements right off the bat.
Okay.
Because as soon as you do that, customers aren't going to take the long view on this, right? If a company says, hey, we're improving the customer experience, we're working on this, they're going to expect it next week. So what I would do is I would focus on making some very specific changes that I could then communicate to the customers. So I would work on reducing call time. I would work on improving the website. I would work on, you know, a couple, again, just a few very concrete things that customers can relate to and say, oh, yeah, that is better. So that when you go out with that messaging, it resonates. And then you can say, and here are the next things we're working on, and we want you to know that this is an ongoing commitment. But you've got to show some progress before you go out and make a bunch of promises to the customers.
That is an excellent point. That is a really good point. Do you see any major differences in how companies of different sizes or in different industries approach this issue or should approach this issue?
You know, I often get this question from B2B companies who want to know, well, we're B2B, we're so different. What should we do? And certainly there are differences in B2B companies. You know, often they need to focus not only on their customer, but their customer's customer. But, you know, nothing I said today in this conversation is only relevant for Fortune 500 B2C companies or for nonprofits or for smaller companies or for government. I mean, sure, every organization is going to have its own special set of things it's dealing with. I mean, you look in the medical field, you know, and you've got all kinds of federal regulations around privacy, things like that, that they have to do. And so every company has its own individual set of things that it's dealing with. But the fundamental principles on understanding your customers' pain points and how you approach changing your organization, it's basically the same no matter what kind of organization you're in. Maybe if you're a four-person mom-and-pop operation, okay, things are going to be a little bit different. You probably have family dynamics built in there and other things like that.
Sure.
But for most medium and large organizations, the fundamental principles of identifying your customers' key pain points, you know, finding the root problems of those pain points, identifying, you know, the processes, the technology, the human resources issues, changing the culture. These things are the same really across the board. You know, and I hesitate to just give blanket advice, right? Because each company does need to approach it as, you know, their own special circumstance, but they should rest assured that, the fundamental principles are essentially the same.
Okay. Is there anything that you think I should have asked you that I haven't?
No, I think this has been great. We've covered a lot.
Well, thank you.
One of the things that I thought was kind of interesting about what Carrie said was not to go out and announce that you're undertaking a major change initiative. First, try and have some small wins so that you can actually demonstrate that this isn't just all about talk, both to your staff and to the public. Because if they don't see any action, they'll think, oh yeah, right, here they go again, it's just PR. So I really liked her approach for making some small change and then making it clear to people that this is an ongoing process and what are the next steps. That's all we've got for today. As always, I would love to hear from you. You can reach me by email, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing, A, at frankreactions.com. You can telephone me toll-free at 1-866-544-9262. You can find me on Twitter at Tema Frank, on Facebook, on Google+, all the usual places. I'd really love to get your suggestions for who you'd like me to interview or topics you'd like me to cover, as well as your feedback on what you like and don't like about the show generally. I'm always eager to make it better for all of you. I really appreciate your listening, and I look forward to chatting with you again in 2 weeks. Bye.